Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Friday, January 6th, 2017. Authorities in Imatong State have imposed a travel ban.
Anybody who is going to Juba or the Magui, they should wait first for some hours. Then, because when the criminals attack, the bus is on the way, there's an operation going on. So nobody should go until we give a green light for them to go. That's for their safety.
And a South Sudanese former governor forms a new political party.
We have found that the only way forward is to come up with an organization, with a movement that will seek lasting peace for the people of South Sudan, a movement that will reconcile the people of South Sudan.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudan government officials have just signed a five-year deal with oil companies to increase production in the country. The agreement also allows companies to drill new oil wells and to be compensated for income lost during the country's three-year-long conflict. Tito Justin reports for VOA from Juba.
The deal was reached this morning in Juba at the Ministry of Petroleum between the South Sudan government and China National Petroleum Corporation, or CNPC, and Petronas of Malaysia, both of which have invested in South Sudan's oil sector. Minister of Petroleum Ezekiel Lul Gatkwot says the deal will enable CNPC, Petronas and other oil companies to export enough crude oil that will generate significant revenue for both South Sudan and the oil companies.
Now is the exploration production sharing agreement, extending it for another 5 years so that the partners can put in more money into the oil industry. Because if you are not extending this, they will not be able to increase the production in Paloch, especially the Deepok, and also resume the production in Jeepok, which is Block 1, 2 and 4.
In 2012, some oil companies were shut down because of fighting, while more were shut down in 2013 after the conflict erupted between government and SPLM-IO forces in December. For 15 months, the production facilities remained closed. Lul says the government will compensate the affected companies so they can invest in the country. Asked how much the government will pay the companies, Lul declined to disclose any figures, referring to that part of the agreement as technical work.
Of course, it will also be based on the work plan. What are they going to be doing? New drilling, exploration. Then you calculate, because each project has a budget. So I cannot actually tell you this is how much it will cost, but it will be based on the projects that are being carried out. And then from there, we can come to the conclusion. By the end of the year, if you ask me, then I will tell you how much.
In previous years, 90% of South Sudan's revenue has come from oil. South Sudan officials have pledged to invest more in the oil sector to improve the economy. Lul says in the near future, South Sudan officials hope the oil sector will pump over 300,000 barrels per day. He says his ministry is working with oil companies to drill new wells in the country.
We have to bring in more production by exploring, producing new wells. So these are the things that we have signed. With this package now signed, we will now be moving quickly to produce oil in the places that we did not have before, and the place that we are producing now, the oil production will increase, and the resumption of the oil production in northern Leech and Ruweng states will now be realized.
Jia Yong, the president of CNPC, says China will work with South Sudan to support the resumption of oil production in the country.
We will work very hard together with the Ministry of Petroleum and Gas. Help them. Help us. We do our best. To do our best to contribute for this country's economic development and also the bright future.
Government and rebel forces repeatedly fought for control over areas where the oil fields are located, especially in the northern part of the country. Lul insists the country is now safe, and he has personally visited oil fields under government control.
Security 100%. There is no fear at all. Soldiers are deployed. Police are there. National security is there. Just for precaution. But if you look at the roads, people are walking, going back and forth.
with their cows, selling them. People are visiting one another. So there is no reason for the partners to say that there is no security there. They should start immediately.
Lul says the companies will create a safer environment as they continue to export crude oil from South Sudan. South Sudan also signed an oil production and export deal with Khartoum last year. The deal also allows South Sudan to import Sudanese electricity from oil fields in Higlej. Late last year, some South Sudanese lawmakers proposed a total shutdown of the country's oil production, arguing that Juba is spending over 8% of its oil revenue on paying Sudan for transit and pipeline fees. For VOA News, I am Tito Justin in Juba.
Authorities in Imatong State have banned travels by land along the busy Torit, Juba and Magui roads following reports of repeated killings and looting of civilians by unidentified armed groups. Imatong State authorities say commercial and private vehicles are not allowed to travel in between Torit, Juba and Magui. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Torit on the impact of the order.
The announcement of the ban was broadcasted over the Voice of Eastern Equatoria on Thursday evening following deadly attacks by unidentified armed men along the roads this week. Mayor of Torit Town, Eddie William Ponciano, says the decision was reached following a security meeting. He says state security operatives will comb through suspected hideouts of gunmen along the dangerous roads.
About the vehicles which are going to Juba, or any border going to Juba, or anybody who is going to Juba or the Magui, they should wait first for some hours. Then, because when the criminals attack, the bus is on the way, there's an operation going on. So nobody should go until we give a green light for them to go. That's for their safety. Because the criminals, they're not in one place, they've scattered. Maybe they will make an ambush ahead there, they will harm people also. That's why we stop the buses not to go.
William says the security will arrest any suspected criminals to ensure that the roads are safe for commuters.
The operation which is going on is to clear the roads freely from any looting or any killing on the road. It's the final stage we are now in. It started from the second up to now. But how many days ahead, nobody knows. Depends to when will it finish.
Most passengers and drivers have welcomed the decision. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Jacqueline Ihore, Torit resident, says drivers should not risk the lives of their passengers by traveling on roads leading to the Imatong state capital Torit until it is safe.
This kind of drivers who are taking people, they know very well the road is bad, but they come at the park to take people since the road is bad. Drivers should understand that death is paining and should stay until things cool, then they can begin carrying passengers.
Sunday Ihisa is another Torit resident. She says she wanted to travel out of Torit but cancelled her plans until the roads are safe. Speaking in colloquial Arabic, Ihisa says it is better to wait than risk traveling to Juba now.
I will wait because I'm seeing things are not good, and I will put trust in God and wait. When the road is safe, then I will travel.
A driver who did not want to be identified for fear of government reprisal says drivers risk their lives on the roads every day because it is their only source of income. He says he knows of some colleagues who were killed while transporting passengers to Juba and Magui. On Wednesday, 2 people were killed and 6 others injured, including the driver, when unidentified armed men opened fire on a taxi bus traveling from Torit to Juba, making it the first deadly attack on the Juba-Torit road of the new year. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Torit.
Ongoing fighting and insecurity in South Sudan prompted the U.S. State Department to update its travel warning yesterday, cautioning its citizens about intercommunal violence and crime in South Sudan. Yesterday's warning replaces the one issued after fighting broke out in the capital in July, which prompted the State Department to order its non-emergency embassy staff to leave the country. The latest travel warning lifted that departure order for non-emergency employees and adjusted the embassy's staffing profile, saying the changes reflect an increase in focus on humanitarian assistance and conflict mitigation. The State Department said yesterday's warning was issued after careful evaluation of the security situation in Juba and elsewhere in the country. It did not provide details on exact locations where violence is taking place. A South Sudanese politician has formed a new political party which he says is designed to bring change to his home country. The former governor of Western Equatorial State, Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, tells Ayen Bior that his party, the National Movement for Change, will give South Sudanese a chance to change what he calls the status quo. He says his party is open to all South Sudanese regardless of ethnicity or class.
We have found that the only way forward is to come up with an organization, with a movement that will seek lasting peace for the people of South Sudan. A movement that will reconcile the people of South Sudan. A movement that will accept all ethnic groups in South Sudan to live in diversity. And that is the South Sudan movement, national movement for change.
Is this a social movement or a political party?
It is both ways. It is a social movement. It is a political movement. It is a movement that is looking for a change, a better change for every South Sudanese who is living in South Sudan.
And so,
wherever they are, depending on their ethnicity, religious background, we don't have a difference. We are going to embrace every individual in Equatorial region, in Bahr Ghazal, in Upper Nile.
And sir, someone with your level of influence and experience and expertise, arguably, you could have really gone several ways. You could have started an NGO. You know, you could have even written a book. Why, though, did you decide to create a movement? Why this and not all the other options that you have at your disposal?
I have all the options in my hand, but the call of the marginalized South Sudanese people has made me to decide to form a movement that the people of South Sudan will be reckoned with. Because SPLM, that brought us independence, has failed totally to bring the lasting peace that people wanted. Things are getting from bad to worse. And the SPLM has failed to decide and correct their differences. Therefore, as one of the leaders in South Sudan, it is important for us with the team I'm working with to change the status quo by forming a movement that will accept every South Sudanese disregarding their ethnic background.
You're thousands of miles away from South Sudan. So what type of impact do you think you'll have as you are outside of the country?
I have been approached by South Sudanese people across the globe, at home, in the diaspora, and everywhere, to lead them in this political party. Therefore, wherever I am, I will continue to lead the people and approach them and gather them together.
That's Joseph Bangasi Bakasoro, former governor of what was then Western Equatorial State. He was speaking to Ayen Bior earlier today from Atlanta, Georgia. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, a European country makes a large donation to help South Sudanese refugees in Uganda. Find out more when we come back.
For in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. We are also on the web at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on VOA Africa.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what infrastructure does your local and national government invest in?
Investment in local infrastructure here in my country is mainly roads, hospitals, schools, and other infrastructure that caters for some social needs.
Honestly, we have a lot that the country has to invest in, but I keep seeing the country prioritizing so much in security, in tear gas.
Maternal health care and basic education for the children, and well, for now, that's what I can say.
The government is investing much into load, that is transport. Maybe some schools are coming up and some renovation of hospitals. That's what I can say.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. The UN Refugee Agency is welcoming donation of more than $3 million by the government of Belgium to help refugees in Uganda. The UNHCR says the donation comes at the right time and will cater for the needs of tens of thousands of South Sudanese fleeing to Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo. For VOA News, Mungume Davis Rwakarinj has more from Kigali.
UNHCR spokesman Charles Yaxley says the funding will be used for providing much-needed aid to unaccompanied children who fled the recent wave of violence in South Sudan.
There's children who've been deprived of the chance to live a normal life. Now, one of our key priorities is making sure that these children are protected from the moment they arrive in the country. So those who are in need of reuniting with parents or family and community members, we look to do that immediately.
He says refugees have been crossing the border from South Sudan into Uganda at an average rate of 2,200 per day since the violence erupted in July in Juba. Uganda is now home to more than 1 million refugees who have fled from South Sudan. Most of the refugees have been resettled in the northern Ugandan districts of Adjuman and Yumbe. A settlement in Bidibidi hosts more than 250,000 South Sudanese refugees. Yaxley says most of the children are malnourished and exhausted after spending days traveling on foot.
And we also look to make sure that the parents looking after these children, which are predominantly women, are also provided with the protection they need. There's reports of high levels of sexual violence being perpetrated in South Sudan, and this donation will reinforce our abilities to provide those survivors with the psychosocial support and protection that they need.
Alia Rose Duku is vice chairperson of the Pagrinya 2 Refugee Committee. Speaking by phone from the settlement, Rose says she's grateful for the donation.
Actually, women are really suffering. Their houses are being blown by wind, so they need to help us with materials for building houses.
Rose, who ran from Kajokeji herself, says she witnessed some of her neighbors being raped by men in uniform. She says besides counseling, such women need help becoming self-reliant.
The support they should give is at least something that can make them to at least open a business for themselves.
Yaxley and Rose say the international community should pressure the warring factions in South Sudan to cease hostilities to allow the refugees to return home and plan for their future. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rwakarinj in Kigali, Rwanda.
Still in Uganda, a church-based South Sudanese organization is trying to help with things the UN Refugee Agency does not provide to thousands of refugees who continue to flee from violence in some parts of South Sudan. Simon Peter Apiku has the story for VOA from the Ugandan capital, Kampala.
The South Sudanese International Christian Fellowship Church was founded in 2012 to cater to the spiritual and emotional needs of South Sudanese students in Kampala. Pastor Joseph Simba of the Anglican clergy is head of the church. He says his congregation includes thousands of refugees from all over South Sudan, and his church regularly provides assistance to refugees in northern Uganda. He says the plight of refugees forced him to mobilize support for his fellow countrymen and women.
The thing I just saw is not good.
in the life of human beings. Some people doesn't get water for drinking. Some people doesn't get water for bathing. These are basic things for. And then the most of the children they walk without shoes, and then the type of food they eat is not healthy.
The South Sudanese International Christian Fellowship first delivered aid to refugees in 2014 in camps located in the Adjumani district. Reverend Simba says after witnessing the suffering inside the camps, his congregation made a commitment to continue supporting the refugees. Church volunteers returned to the camps in 2015 with shoes, clothes, and bed sheets, things UNHCR and other agencies do not provide. He says church members will go back to the camps in the next couple of days with more assistance.
We want to buy some shoes, and then we want to buy some clothes and shirts and all that, and mattress, and then bed sheets and all that. Yes, we have some resources now. We do mobilization since last year.
Support for the refugees comes from church members who struggle themselves to make ends meet. He says he was deeply touched by the gestures of love from children who donated their own shoes and clothes for the refugee children.
We don't have any resources from outside. It's not any organization to come and help us in terms of resources, in terms of money. But for our local people in the church, they used to brought all the things. Because I used to tell them, these are our people, no one to come from outside to help them.
The clergyman says his church also gives spiritual and psychosocial support to the refugees.
Then we help them. We sit with them. We pray with them. We encourage them. And that's the things we do.
Pastor Simba says South Sudanese must change and learn to accept each other if there is ever going to be real peace and stability in the country.
People doesn't have patience, tolerance, self-control, obedience, respect, honor. We don't have.
Simba says he has also been actively encouraging South Sudanese college students in Uganda to use the holidays to help fellow South Sudanese students in the camps. He says it's time South Sudanese stop causing pain and start doing something noble for their brothers and sisters. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kampala.
From Kampala, we go to Zimbabwe, where the biggest conservation group today called for full transparency on the government's sale of 35 elephants to China last month. The government has been scrambling for cash over the past year and initially denied reports of the sale. Sebastian Muofu reports for VOA from Harare.
Late Thursday, President Robert Mugabe's government confirmed that it exported 35 elephants last month, despite having earlier dismissed the reports by the Zimbabwe Conservation Task Force. On Friday, Johnny Rodriguez, who heads the conservation group, said the secrecy raises concerns of corruption and inhumane treatment of the animals during their transfer to China.
There's nothing being transparent about it because you can see in Zimbabwe where the corruption and the greed is so deep. These animals belong to Africa. You know, if you're going to export them, you export to the neighboring countries where the system is conducive and it's suitable for these animals.
Rodriguez says he doubts the money will be used for the benefit of animals, as the government claims.
They keep claiming that the money goes into conservation. I can't see it. The Chinese donated 4 point something million. That was to contain the poaching. It's not happening. But there's certain people that have got fingers on the pie and making a lot of money on the expense of the wildlife.
Last year, Zimbabwe's government said it would sell wildlife and use the proceeds to feed wild animals that were feeling the effects of a drought brought on by the weather condition known as El Nino. Zimbabwe has an elephant population of over 83,000, the second highest in Africa. But the number is dropping as poachers kill the giant beast for their ivory tusks, which remain in high demand in Asia. Sebastian Mofu for VOA News, Harare.
Thank you. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. South Sudan officials signed a multi-year deal with oil companies to increase production today. The agreement also allows companies to drill new oil wells and to be compensated for lost income during the country's three-year-long conflict. The deal was reached in Juba at the Ministry of Petroleum between South Sudan and the China National Petroleum Corporation and Petronius of Malaysia, both of which have invested heavily in South Sudan's oil sector. Minister of Petroleum Ezekiel Lo Gatkuth says the deal will enable CNPC, Petronius, and other oil companies to export enough crude oil that will generate significant revenue for both South Sudan and the oil companies. In 2012, some companies were shut down because of fighting, while more were shut down in 2013 after the conflict erupted between government and SPLM-IO forces in December. For 15 months, the production facilities remain closed. Lul says the government will compensate the affected oil companies so they can invest in the country. Asked how much the government will pay the companies, Lul declined to disclose any particular figures, referring to that part of the agreement as technical work. A travel ban is in place in Imatong State along the Torit, Juba, and Magui roads after several killings and lootings were reported along those roads. State authorities say commercial and private vehicles are not allowed to travel between Torit, Juba, and Magui on those roads. The ban was announced over the Voice of Eastern Equatoria last night following deadly attacks by unidentified armed men along the roads this week. Torit Mayor Eddie William Poziano says security agents will comb through suspected hideouts of gunmen along those roads. He says the agents will arrest any suspected criminals to ensure that the roads are safe for commuters. It's not clear when the travel ban will be lifted. And finally, continued fighting and insecurity in South Sudan prompted the U.S. State Department to update its travel warning to South Sudan on Thursday. It warns Americans about intercommunal violence and violent crime in the country, but does not specify where that violence is occurring. It replaces a U.S. travel warning issued after fighting broke out in the capital in July, which at the time prompted the State Department to order non-emergency embassy personnel to leave the country. Yesterday's warning lifts that departure order and adjusts the embassy's staffing profile, saying the change reflects an increased focus on humanitarian assistance and conflict mitigation. And that's a look at some of today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Anna Guy by Crazy Fox.
Me can be a refugee in my own country.
We have been listening to Crazy Fox with the song Anna Guide, which literally means I'm here to stay. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.